with all the regrading they've done in the gravel, but for years, there would look quite a bit there that could be seen, and you'll see some of that in the picture. This was the first bridge built by the company. It was built in the early 30s, or late 30s, when they built the rest of it. And then the cover was put on it in 1940, because when the guys from the dorm would go to work, it would the snow usually came at night, and they discovered that it would be very slippery going across that bridge and dangerous, so they built the cover on the bridge. This is the bridge after the company put a cover on it. Now, the bridge that the company built did wash out in 1948 floods. There was mass floods in the state of Washington that year, and that bridge washed out in 48 and had to be quickly replaced, and at that time they added the cover to it. The first shipment of ore left the dock at Lucerne in 1938. And was greeted in Chelan royally by the politicians and the dignitaries. From Chelan, the ore buckets were bused to Beebe, where the railroad was, and from the railroad they went to Tacoma to the processing plant there. And so from the time the first buckets of ore went to the processing plant in Tacoma, was 42 years from the time that the mine had been found, and that's because of the isolation. It was such a hard area to find. This is a picture of the town site that we had in the 1940s. The buildings are still pretty much the same, but they've got new roofs and new paint. This is a picture of the dorm room. And many of you stay in these rooms. I'm staying in one of the lodges. They wanted to have good workers here, and they wanted to keep good workers, and it was very isolated. So these were only two men to a room in the dorm. Most mining towns, company towns, and this was a company town. The people slept in, the men slept in dormitories. But here, they had each only two guys to a room. So that was quite a change for people coming here. This is the sink that he had for shaving, and if you're in one of those dorms, you've seen those sinks. This is the dining hall, as they saw it when the miners had it. And they have hosted the dining hall for several years before the villagers took them out and redone. The posts still there, but they took the tables around the posts and have more round tables in now.
Those are the same big old copy urns that we see in the
hall. Yes, those are the ones that, and the village used those for several years before they put them up. They haven't put up away now, but they still have them on display, but those are the originals. Those were left behind.
They like pictures?
I'm not sure if they are. They might be. They've kept a lot of those. A lot of the buildings look the same in many regards. This one has probably had, well, in the main building, the hotel building, has had probably the most remodeling done to it. And then some of the chalets have, because they've been made for more people to live in. They were just one family in the mining thing. We had a full hospital and a doctor on call at all times. And periodically, a dentist would come up from Chelan to take care of dental needs for the company, so there was a dental office that was fully furnished by the company, too. And this guy actually staged it. Leonard Pemberg is his name. And he's sitting in the chair, and he did a time exposure on the photograph. Most of the women went out to have their babies, but the last couple of years we had a doctor and wife team here who were willing to deliver babies. She was a nurse. And there were nurses here in other years, but not affiliated with the doctor. So the last 2 years, There were babies born here, and the last baby was born in April of 1957, and the mine closed a lot more. So, and I have a book in the library, little library up in D.C. that has the deaths and births of Freeman Lane and Daisy. I'm still finding a couple of people that I've become aware of that were born here during that time. And there was a couple that were born here that were not planned to come as soon as they came, and so the mom didn't get out in time. But otherwise, most of the last 2 years, there were several babies born here. The company wanted the people to have plenty to do to be happy here. So this recreation hall, the village center you call it, we called it the rec hall, was built. This was a state-of-the-art gymnasium at that time. It had, it was one of the best in the state of Washington. It had the special floors. Large canvas covers were put on the floors when we had other activities in there. The basketball was played during the winter, and teams would come in from the outside to play the basketball teams here. And those teams, come on, Dorothy. You can just come across the front, it'll be easier. And the people would come in from the outside, and in either 38 or 39, the guy couldn't remember which year that told me this, but the Washington State team actually won the state amateur basketball championship. So it was a pretty active place. This is a New Year's Eve dance, and that was a big affair. Now, for a kid like me, who was still in grade school, up to 8 grades is what we had here, we made big bucks because there weren't enough babysitters. Once you went out to high school and came back, then you were eligible to go to the dance. Remember, there was no alcohol in the village. It was a dry place as far as the company was concerned. You could have it in your personal space in your home. You could order it from the guy in Chelan, and he'd ship it up on the bus, or the boat and the bus. But there was no alcohol sold here. There was a tavern of concern that you could go to in the summer, and you could bring alcohol back. But so the New Year's dance, there was still no alcohol. Now, there was a lot of bottles stashed in the snowbanks outside, I can tell you. But most of the women that had parties had them after the dance, which ended promptly at midnight. But this is a picture of the New Year's Eve dance. There were also church services in the gym in the 40s. They had a minister that came in from Wenatchee a couple times a month to hold church services. And when he was going to a different call in Spokane, Curzon, the general manager, wrote the church and said that they needed to send somebody else, that they needed to have one. A Catholic priest came in on occasion, and they had services in the home. And then in the 1950s, we had an employee who came to work here with his brother, and he said he'd started feeling a calling. And he worked here, and he had church services weekly. And the company was delighted to have him here and made, you know, facilities for him, room for him in the village center to use. We had Sunday school classes, and in the later years I taught some of the primary or pre-primary classes. So it was, the village center was used like it is today for a lot of different things. Community Christmas Tree was a huge event. That was the annual thing, and every child in the village got a present from Santa, an individual present picked for them by the committee. And evening started with each school class presented the program. This is the grade school, they're all grade school, but this is the big room, the fifth through eighth grades. And you can see the different sizes of the boxes, so you can see that they got. Now that changed in 1952 because the state of Washington outlawed gambling. And the slot machines went away from the rec hall. Community Club paid for all these presents for the kids. So in 1952, I learned my first political lesson because the big room, the fifth through the eighth graders, all we got were little boxes of apples and chocolates. We didn't get the individual presents anymore. But that, I remember that. And then Santa came to give everybody a present. And here the kids are getting their individual presents after we've all done our singing. And you can see that everybody in town came, because even the balcony is full and kids are sitting on the parents' lap. So it was a big affair. The pool hall was a little different. The bowling alley was very popular. They had men's leagues and women's leagues, and boy, the standings were in the weekly newspaper, and the standings were changed every week, and they had wooden signs that they could move the names around. And they had junior bowling for kids age 12 and up on Saturdays during the winter time during the school year. Now this part of the Village Center, which is a very much busy place these days, it was adults only. You had to be 21 to be in there. Now, your parents could take your hand and walk you through there to take the stairs out to shortcut to get out, but we weren't allowed to be in there to do anything, so it was strictly. And you'll see all these nice chairs at the poker tables. Aren't they nice? They're still sitting in them. They're still holding up, and they have them in some of the rooms, too. So pretty well-built furniture in those days. The fountain lunch was for ice cream and much more. It was only this section and then the part that goes around the corner. And there were chairs all the way from end to end, and a little board that lifted up on each end where the women went in and went to work. And you can see they had a grill. That's what their grill. And they cooked steak dinners and fish and chips and things like that. It was popular with the men in the dorms who got tired of the dining hall food. And a family would go there. Some of the kids during the winter time got lunch there. Most of us took our lunch. And then when I was in the upper grades, there were two girlfriends and I. We liked to go home for lunch every day, so we hiked home and back every day for lunch. We had to walk fast, but you walk is what you did up here. And this, of course, has been changed. And the room where they have the tables now, that was closed off in those days. So the stools at the counter were all there were to sit in. That was closed off. And that's where the storage area was. And then the area where the lift is, when I first came, they said, what was the lift? And I said, well, what is the lift? And they took me down and showed me. Well, that's where all the frozen food was kept, just down in the lift area that was full of freezers. So it was quite different, but similar. Pool had 8 grades. It started in 1937 with one class, one room. Then in 1939, it went to 2 rooms. And the teacher that was here till the end hired on it. She and another person started teaching in 39, and her husband worked the dock down at Lucerne. He was kind of trained out there. And so she was here for all that time. But this is a 1940s classroom. This is in the big room. And then this is the big room. And this had to be taken the year after we left. The winter of 55-56 was a record winter snowfall in Holden. And there's pictures of it in Life magazine. And I recently acquired a couple more of those magazines for the museum. But these kids are turned with their backs to the windows. Well, the big deal about being in the big room was that you got to work your way to the windows. And so yeah, the fifth grade started by the teacher over by the blackboard, and you worked your way across. Well, these kids, I guess it got so bad that year that they turned them with their backs to the... The other thing was, the class ahead of me that graduated, they got screwed too, because that was the year the first grade baby boomers hit school, and they needed a whole room for the first grade. So they opened up the basement and added a fourth classroom, and Mrs. Fields said the big room would go down the basement, and those eighth graders, so they had 2 little windows, and here they waited 3 years to get theirs through. That's kind of the way it was. Grade Goss graduation in 1953, and graduation was a big deal. as you can see, like with the dance, dress up was the occasion. These girls have the fancy dresses, the boys have suits and ties, they've got boutonnieres, the girls all have corsages. The class speaker was my brother Jim, and he's the fellow on your far right. And the day before, Mom decided he needed to have his hair trimmed, but the barber was out of town, so she borrowed some electric trimmers from the neighbors. And she just started to trim the back of his head a little, and they shocked her, and she went all the way up the back of his head. So his instructions were that he had, and he did very well, he had to get up, walk over to give his speech, back up all the way to his chair so nobody would know while he was on stage that that had happened. This is the picture of the last day of school. There's a picture in the little museum that they have out right now. And it's also a very well-known picture. It was taken by the Wenatchee Daily World. It was swiped a few years ago when we still had the old museum up on the hillside. And they were gracious enough to, I went and got some more copies and made it out of separate. But there was almost 120 kids at the time that mine closed in 1957. This is a picture of the houses that were in Honeymoon Heights, and the very first families that came, the engineers especially, when they started the mine up operating in 1937, there were a lot of engineers hired, and they took over these buildings in Honeymoon Heights. There was a story about one of them was a long building that it had bunk houses, or bunk beds in it, for the guys to sleep in the big bunk house, and they cut it in half and made a duplex out of it. And they just remodeled them. I don't know that any houses were built up there after the initial mine was started. But the problem when the mine started operating, the noise and the ground shook so much that it was dangerous. And the other problem was it was a long way to walk from town to climb all the way up there. The Honeymoon Heights was up at the above the 300 level, or about the 1500 level, which I guess there's something building in front of the portal of the mine now that the mining company or the reclamation company put in. But anyway, they started building houses down here and laid out the flat up above. This is a winter picture of Honeymoon Heights. And then this is a winter picture of the Chalet Hill. You can see we did get a lot of snow up here, and they do get a lot of snow up here. This is a picture of what Winston Camp looked like. There were 101 homes up there. And if you go up there today, you can find a lot of the foundations and rock walls that were built. The very first house I always like to show where I lived, we lived on the bottom row. They were in rows. The bottom row faced the creek. There was a space in the middle that didn't have houses on the bottom row because there was huge springs in there and it was too wet to build. But I can find our house because we have this great big green tree in our yard, this huge tree. So this was our house on the bottom row. And across the street was a little garage. That was our garage. And my dad had an old pickup, so he got to keep his car up here during the winter. Everybody else, if you didn't have a place to get your car off the street, then they all sat down at Lucerne by the boat dock all summer, or all winter. They disconnected the batteries, and that's how they stored them. A few people had really nice new cars sent them out and stored them in Chelan, but most people kept them down there. So that's where my house was. But 101 homes, there were a lot of people here at the end. This is a closer view of that, and you can see a good picture of the garage here on the left. And the house next to us was huge. Now, when we moved there in the 50s, it had a apartment in the top floor that initially had more because they had 10 kids. And they still had six or eight of them when they first moved up here. They came here in the very early years. So this is the first row, and there used to be a lower road. It got totally washed out by the creek. The first time it washed out, company rebuilt it the second time it was just left. So after that, we've driven the, actually I think the second washout was after the village took over time to think about it, because we used to go straight on that road, and then they blocked it off. But, and this is a winter picture taken a little bit further up. Now, that snow level there is on top of a rock wall, and if you go up there today in the wintertime, or even in the summertime, you can find that rock wall. It's getting kind of blown out, but you can still find that rock wall there. And this is a picture of the middle row, and you can see how deep the snow got, and this wasn't that late, 50-60. This is just standard. This is a group of Boy Scouts. Youth activities were prevalent. Up here we had Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, Bluebirds, and Camp Partners. And very active groups. The Boy Scouts would go out during the summer to camporees up near Chelan. There's a place where they have camporees. And the girls would go, the campfire girls would go out once a year. And that was a big deal for us, because we got to stay in a hotel, because the boat in the winter only ran 3 days a week, so it ran on Fridays and Mondays. So the council fire was on Saturday. The girls from all the other places drove down and back that day. We went to Wenatchee on Friday night, stayed in a hotel with elevators, and it was fun. So, and the youth activities were greatly supported up here also by families. This is a play that the school put on. The school put on plays every year. They did different operettas. This is the Frog Prince. And again, like you do in the village here, you make do with what you had. We did have two rented costumes, the prince's costume, and he had a frog costume earlier. And then the butler's costume was rented. But the girls that are maids, we wore our score dance outfits. And then our moms made these black cummerbunds to put on. And the queen's robe was in a costume shop. Does that sound familiar? We had costume boxes up in the original chalet, too. I'm sure they were gone by the time they burned, but we did like you guys do. We made do with what we had, and people would donate things, and those king and queen's robes were made by mothers and stuff like that. So it was, again, a lot of similarities between the two communities and how we did things.
Did you graduate high school here?
No, we did not have high school here.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, only 8 grades, so that was the thing. And some families moved when the kids went away to high school. And we moved. That was one of the reasons my mom moved. I was heartbroken. I did not get to graduate from 8th grade here, because my dad came home and died when I was in the 7th grade. And so we sent, well, my younger brother and I were sent out to get out of the way while they moved. But my mom worked till August, because the wages here were much better than what she worked as a waitress. But the union had a category for the women who worked in the mess hall in the fountain here. So they made good wages. So my mom worked here as long as she could. This is the alphabet. Going out was not very common, so it was a real dress-up affair. Notice the ladies have their nicest coats on, and the guys have jackets. Don't see a tie, but he's got a jacket and slacks and that. And you didn't go out very often, because it was expensive to travel on the boat, and you really didn't have time unless you had a reason to go out. The 4th of July picnic. The picnic on the 4th was put on by the company, and Labor Day was put on by the union. And they were, everything was provided, all the food was provided, they had all these races that they had. We earned tin money, and if you have a chance to look at the little museum, what we have of it, there is a ring of the tin money up there. You'd go into the store and the guy would sign up his name for $5. $5 was a change or something. That went a long way in those days. They were 50-cent pieces. And he'd get $5, then it would be deducted from his check, but that was the money. And we could use it everywhere in town except the post office. They had to have U.S. currency. So this was, the races started in the morning. They had three-legged races, gunny sack races for kids. Then they had, the ladies would later have log sawing contests and things like that. And in the 40s, they had, the guys had, the men had an egg and a spoon race. This is the pie eating contest in the mining days. Now, we used two crusted berry pies, and they were pretty difficult to eat. You can see they had to keep their hands down. My brother was a pretty good eater. He unseated the champion. This is the picnic at noon. This picnic area, now they just have a few camping areas up there, and the table. The tables are gone, and the big stone fireplace is gone. It's a little hard to see it. It had a sign hanging on it, but that was a big stone fireplace. And then after the year that we had 2 years. We had a former high school majorette married to a transportation guy, so she started a little baton twirling group, and we performed at the ballpark on that. And the one gal doesn't show. There's three gals that are sisters that are there, and I just recently confirmed that this gal's name, the little gal, the lady that taught us lived in the apartment that was in the house that they had at camp, and so she had her, even though all the other girls were from the big group. And her name, which I've forgotten now, but I've got it written down somewhere. But anyway, she was part of our group for those 2 years. Now, again, Genuine Holden. Our moms made our skirts. We wore white tops. Our hats are made out of oatmeal boxes with the material glued on them and the rip-rack glued on, and then they made the yarn pom-poms for the hat. Now, the big part of the afternoon was the men's baseball team. And I'm going to take a minute to show you. The ballpark was used all summer long. And like with the basketball, they had teams come in from the outside. But the ball, at the two big events, they had management team play the worker team. And that was the big event after lunch. But I wanted to take a minute to show you. We started the day, we had these huge bleachers built along the one side of the field, and that's the side that where you go up, head out the trails now, that's where they go. But there was the flattish area that's slightly raised from the field before you step onto those trails was a parking lot, and the other side had about four or five rows of bleachers. But we started the morning with the flag salute. It's very hard to see the flag in this picture, but it's on a pole here. And the flag's hanging up there. And that's how the day would start, was with the flag salute.
Linda, were you on that, the baton twirling?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, that's right.
We've seen four pictures of me so far. But I don't like to tell people that. I was also in the fifth, my brother and I were both in that picture by Santa Claus singing. And I was one of the maids in the
play.
Yeah, and I was in the front, and I didn't know that. I showed this picture several times, and somebody says, you know, Linda, that's you. I'm in the one where I'm showing out the fireplace to everybody. I was showing the fireplace, and I'm actually standing in front of the picture. But I didn't realize it was there. We had skiing, also very popular. We had a rope tow. The guys hooked it. The bottom part was a huge rim off of a fork truck. Took the, put it on the lower part, and then when there was enough snow to have the ski area going, they put it on the toboggan and take it up to the top of the hill, and it pulled us up there. Now, once in a while, the snow would cover it up, and they'd have to go out and dig it out. But we had that. We had that thing working all winter, and as you can see, we had some gorgeous days. Of course, now the brush has grown and the trees have grown a lot taller than they were in those days. And the most popular sledding hill was the last one as you're walking out toward the ballpark, the short one. the parents like to keep the kids on that one. Now, some of us from the bigger room like to go, we'd start at the top row, come down, come down, come down, and see how far you could go on the bottom row. But this was the most popular one, and that's that last short hill as you walk out toward the ballpark. Unfortunately, things ran out. The fellow that works with me on some of the stuff recently found some information that said that he has been through the museums up at in Victoria, and that the mine was going to run 20 years, and that's when it ran, 20 years. In 1957, they announced in April that the mine would close, and July 1, and that's what it did. So a few of the people tore down their houses and moved the lumber somewhere else. And then in 1963, the houses were burned. And now we have another prospector. This is a prospector of a different kind. This man's name is Wes Freed. And he wrote letters to the mining people wanting to buy town because he thought it'd be a good place for a youth camp. And he wrote one letter in 1957 or 58, I forget which year. He wrote another letter. And in 1960, they were very close to a deal with a company that was going to put a big ski resort up here. But this is all Forest Service land, except for the working area land. All the land where the buildings were, the houses that were burned, were all Forest Service land. And the company land, the Lutheran buildings, are all on Forest Service land. And so the company decided they weren't going to do that. And so when he wrote his third letter, he got a call one day and asked him to make a collect call, and they told him he got the mine for a dollar. So he told the people at Lutheran Bible Institute in Seattle about it, and that was the first they knew he'd been writing to them. So that's where it started. That was too big for them to handle eventually, and now it's a worldwide thing, of course. These are the forerunners. These are marvelous people. And later in the week, I will have a DVD showing of, they had a 25-year reunion, and the lady that came, spoke to them, I have a recording and pictures that she took. But they came. They rode up from the lake on that truck. That was how they got here. These are the key people that were with them. The lady on the left is Bertha. She was the cook. The guy with the pith helmet is Bergstrom, known as Bergie. And they were the people that were instrumental in getting it going. This is the guys cleaning, doing repair work on the roofs. Here they are hanging all the mattresses out. The mattresses were left on the beds. A lot of things were left behind that, as you saw, they feel that you could use.
And how many years was it that they laid idle?
About 4 years. Because they came in, 61, and they came for a month, and they were a work group, and you're going to be amazed to see what they got done in a month. And they started the four basics. They had work, they had Bible study every morning, they worked so many hours a day, they had a guy that was a naturalist, they had study sessions, like we have study sessions, and they had their recreation. They did a lot in a month. They were amazing. Here they are cleaning the dorm rooms, and look at the difference between the walls she's cleaned and the walls she has not cleaned. These walls are clean, and this one's got all the grub on it, because the buildings have sat for all those years. This is window, and again, you can see there's actually a window there that she's cleaned. And then you can see the windows she hasn't cleaned. And this is, and they also had, I think it was close to 1,000 broken windows. And many of it was just vandalism. Unfortunately, there had been quite a bit of vandalism. The blankets had been left on the beds too, the wool blankets. And then a lot of the blankets were folded up and put in the Boy Scout cabin, which was at the opposite end of the village that was up there with the towns, 101 homes. I forgot to mention when I talked about the Boy Scouts had a log camp at that end. This end, the campfire camp is still there. It's the one that the Forest Service uses when they come up. But those were cabins were for those groups. But yeah, here she is cleaning the windows. What a chore. Well, then they found out a washing machine was going to be, or a generator was coming in from Wenatchee. So the foreigners went up to the village and found a house that had a washing machine left in it. A lot of people didn't move all the stuff here because the company would take it to Chelan on the barge, but after that you were on your own to where you're taking it. Well, in those days you had so little in your house, it was cheaper to leave stuff behind than to haul it. Here they are on a hike, and I believe this was up near Holden Lake that they went about it. Oh, and yes, they dressed up for services on Sunday. Look at this, up here.
High heels.
High heels, yep.
These
That's
are the
right.
Forerunners?
These are the Forerunners.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. The Forerunners came in 60. Now the bridge is interesting. This is another dilemma or question that we have. We've learned a little bit more about bridges over the years. This bridge was here when we left in 57. And I believe in the Forerunner movie, she's got a picture of the west end of it that looks like it's still intact. But sometime between then and when the villagers started arriving, the middle all disappeared and it became just a wood bridge again. So we're not sure who took it. That's part of the mystery I have here. Anyway, this bridge is interesting. We're trying to figure out, as we learn more as we go along and look up things, we learn new things, and that is one of them. This is a picture of the town and the tailings pile that was there when they came. That's how bad it looked. You can imagine what it was like when the wind blew. This is Chalet Hill when the Forerunners were here still. And you can see that there's an antenna, TV antenna on the house, and a couple people left their cars there. They didn't bother to shoot them out. It was too expensive.
Notice there were no trees.
Yeah, no trees at all here. Everything was down. This is a picture of the houses that they saw as they came, and this is the rock wall I mentioned that is still standing there. It's cemented, and it's cemented well. And then this is what it looked like after the burning in 63. And this is a picture of the middle row in 63. And this is the picture after the burning. But you can see the rock walls, and it's still there. Now that first block where my house was, ran into a lady on a boat one day, and she was the naturalist from the Forest Service at that time, but they allowed the village to put a drainage field up there, and so the first block they bulldozed, including the most beautiful cement fireplace and rock walls. It was between two houses, and it was totally circular fireplace, half-circle fireplace, and then half-circle seats, and then the cement stove, or the rock stove, was in the middle. And the reason they built it is the guy who owned the house was a fire chief, and his wife would not let him put fish in the house. This is a picture of the bridge that the 62 work group found when they came. So we're not sure what and when changed and when the metal one went away. That's the mystery we have now. And this is a picture of them coming down from the tailing, and they went across the bridge to get down. This was the 62 work group, and they had a lot of advantages because the Forerunners, they had a dining hall. So when these guys came in 62, they ate in the dining hall and cooked in the dining hall and everything. They had it really good. And this guy came up here in 2004, I think it was, and he mentioned to me that he had slides of the place. And so he went home and did a little. Here's a short, and I'll show it later in the week when I show the Forerunners. This is Carol and Mary Hinderly. They were the first directors. This is a picture of the dining hall. You can see there's still a round table. Beanie. Mm-hmm. Beanie's thing. The dining hall became much more than just a dining hall when he started the Beanie's thing. And there's quite a display on the back board there. This is the loading dock built because many of people come here came for rest recreation. They weren't just working people. The Bluebird buses. This is a picture of the services in the early years in the village center. And that tapestry is saved in the museum stuff. So, but this is a very early, quite a few of these village pictures are from the early years. Now this one is, this is graduation, I think, 2004. Does that sound right, Dorothy and Roy? Dorothy and Roy are in this picture. This is Dorothy in this lovely little satin dress she found in the costume shop. And Roy, they couldn't find this jacket, but you had the cummerbund and the pants and the shirt and the white suspenders. He didn't have the jacket, but otherwise he had the genuine tuxedo. The village school graduation is very different than Holden Village's 8th grade school in that each class person or classes, some years they have several, they pick their own way. This is the start of the village changes. They had flower boxes along the street. This is a picture of the flower box. This is what this room looked like at one time with the before they started using cement, the screen and everything really is what, well, and that, and I guess the smoke took all the heat out too. But they used to use this for a fire pit and had the, you can see a blazing fire going here. But this was a meeting. And this is the first bridge built by the village. This was installed, I think, in 73. There was a story, and maybe you guys have it in your slide, of Mary Schramm talking about the Billy Goat Scruff going across the bridge. She did a whole story on the Billy Goat Scruff. This is the school. This is the elementary room. Now it's been changed again since then. They've changed rooms. And you can notice at this time, it looks like they still have the old windows in. And then this was the upper grade room. That's what about Mark? And this graduate this year, each year the graduate picks what they're going to do. This is the graduate that year. One year they had a progressive one that they started here. They all, teachers all marched. I was here that year. They came out of the library and they had different outfits they had. And besides the teachers, in many years they had other people in the community that gave extra teaching things. And but this year she had the graduation. I wonder, they had one that they had up on the third level and they took seats up for people to sit. Were you guys at that one? And they took people up in the buses that wanted to go and others walked, but the school kids started out from the loading dock, followed the band all the way and hiked up and had it up there. And while they were there, they had a flyby. That was before the Navy had stopped using this as a training valley for Afghanistan, Naval Island, Whidbey Island Naval Air Station on the coast. And so right in the middle of the speech, the flyby came. And it wasn't too long after that. Somebody was here from the Lutherans that knew about it. And he talked to somebody at the base and they got it stopped coming down. But they used to come by. And then another year they did a progressive one where they started it in the rec hall, I think, or village center, we call it. Then they went to her house, then they went to the dining hall, and then they went back to the. So they picked their way of doing it. I thought so.
I was going to ask you, when that, who before that, I thought I saw one of our kids said, no, I don't think it was that time.
Oh, but this, well, yeah, that's her. Now see, like us, they use what they have here. This is the 70s, in the 70s, I think this is done.
We were here 73 to 76.
Yeah, they had...
And the Korean gal is here.
They had the moths, and I couldn't tell if they had... I think they just had sticks, but that was a... And then the pool hall, Wes changed it. And made it a family place, so it's got the jukebox, and he had tons of stuff on the wall. I think they've taken a lot of it down now. But, and then in the back room, besides the pool tables, they have all the different games that they can have. And they had a race at the 4th of July. This one had a picture in the group. Another picture right after this showed Wes jumping in front of them and running across the finish line first, but he didn't run the race. And this is their pie eating contest in the 70s. They use cream pies. Look at it dripping down her face. This was a
4th of July,
and if you haven't been here for a 4th of July, it's something to see. They're very unique with their costumes and the way they do things. This is only the wives can see. This is the 40 Years in the Wilderness Parade. Now, that year, I remember Barbara is here teaching this week, but Lauren was with her then, and he was here that year. And he staggered down the street as Moses and collapsed in the middle of the street, and the hike house came running with the gurney and picked him up on the little wheel gurney, and then the marcher from the hike house had the sign. Moses didn't have his 10 essentials to go on hike. The second one that was really good that year was the laundry ladies had a clothesline. And the front clothesline held, well, the front of the clothesline. They had a pair of bloomers. I don't know where they got them, but they were below the knee bloomers. And then they had a shorter pair of bloomers. And then they had undies, and then they had briefs, and then they had very briefs, and it ended with a thong, which some of the girls, I don't know if they still wear them, but there was a time that they were there. So now the women that they had a big band that year, and Lurbeck, one of the, he's a Lurbeck. This guy here is one of the Lurbeck kids.
Yeah.
And I don't remember which one. But these gals had, you see the green? These gals had been in a drill team in high school. So they went and got drill team greens, got them off the nature path, and that's what they had. And we have the Red Sea had parted, and then Pharaoh started through in his garden cart chariot. This guy has a little kid in there, and you can't see him. And then the majorette has a very special baton. It's made from a pool stick, rock from nature, book tape from the library, attaches the rock to the pool stick, and then fabric from the sewing room, blue and red on each end. And it was perfectly balanced.
That majorette looks kind of familiar.
The what?
The majorette looks familiar.
Yeah, she is. She was 10 years old when she twirled in the Mighty Bee. But we really had fun that year, and the parades are something to see if you're going to be here the 4th of July. They are so imaginative. And of course, there's the summer picnics. I don't know how often they eat outdoors these days, and I know, sadly, right now they're short-handed. But in the summers, when I was coming in the first years, we had, during the summer, we had outdoors almost every Saturday night, so... It was a fun time. Now they do this kind of skiing instead of the hill skiing, but lots of cross-country skiing, very popular. And of course, the village now has a painted ceiling, and this doesn't have a picture of the cross in it, but they have the tile cross in there. And And then we have the bridge, the new ADA bridge. This was put in by the company during my remediation, and this is the new bridge that carries us forward for many, many more years to come, I hope. So this concludes us.
Yeah.